Several hours later, longer than the couple of hours Monty had promised, Jimmy from the telegraph office came running into Longmont, where the group was gathered impatiently waiting for word from the blacksmith. They'd all drunk so much coffee they felt as if they were floating, and even Andre's sumptuous breakfast hadn't done much to cheer him up. Jimmy handed the wire to the sheriff. He read it and got to his feet.
Damn, I should have known as much.
What does it say, Monty?
Jed says the only new rim he's put on in last month was for the livery rental wagon.
Of course. We should have known that Pearlie was right, and that no one who lived around here would be a party to any action against Smoke. It had to be an outsider.
But Monty, why would someone be so dumb as to come into town and rent a wagon to kidnap someone as well-known as Smoke is? That would leave a trail pointing straight back to them as soon as we talk to the livery agent.
Sally, when you've been a sheriff as long as I have, you'll soon learn that most men who ride the Al Hoot Trail are as dumb as a post. Hell, if they were smart, they'd get a job as sheriff like me and get rich.
Fred Morgan shook his head when they asked him who had recently rented his wagon with the new iron rim on the wheels.
Well, I can't rightly say, Sheriff.
Well, why not, Fred?
Why, because nobody rented the buckboard, Sheriff. They stole it night before last.
You mean someone took the wagon without paying you for it?
Yeah, that's right.
Well, why in hell didn't you report it to me?
Because it happens all the time, Sheriff. Lots of folks will find they need a wagon in the middle of the night because theirs broke down, so instead of waking me up, they just take one of mine. Heck, fire, they always bring them back in a day or two.
I think this time your wagon is gone for good, Fred.
But who around here do something mean like that?
They probably weren't from around here, Mr. Morgan.
The group walked slowly back to Longmont's.
Monty, what do you think we ought to do now? That wagon with the new rim was our only clue as to who may have taken Smoke.
Well, there's only four ways they could have gone, so I guess the best thing to do is send riders out along each of the trails leading from town. Sooner or later, they got to come across those wagon tracks.
And until they do?
I suggest you go on back to the Sugarloaf and get packed up for a trip. Soon as the men find out which way they've gone, we'll get a posse together and go after them.
No, Monty, I don't think that's a very good idea.
And why not, Sally?
A large posse would be too easy to spot, and it would move too slow. I think just five or six men should be enough. I think Cal and Pearlie, Lewis and you, and, of course, me, that will be more than enough.
But, Sally, we don't even know how many men we'll be going up against, nor which way they went.
Monty, outside of Smoke himself, you four are the best men I know to have on my side in a fight, no matter what the odds are. I think the five of us will be able to handle it. And from what I hear, Pearlie can track a mouse in a blizzard. We should be all right.
I hope you're right, Sally.
The next morning, with their saddlebags packed for a long trip, Sally and Cal and Pearlie rode back into Big Rock. As they were passing the general store, Peg Jackson stepped out on the boardwalk in front and waved to Sally.
Sally, can I talk to you for a minute?
Why don't you boys go on over to Longmont's while I have a few words with Mrs. Jackson?
Cal and Pearlie tipped their hats to Peg and rode off down the street. Sally climbed down off her horse, tied it to the hitching rail, and then turned to Peg.
Yes, Peg?
I was just wondering if you'd seen Sarah Johnson in the last couple of days.
Why, no. In fact, the last time I saw her was the last time I was in your store.
That's strange. I really don't believe she has any other friends in town she might be staying with.
What do you mean? Is she missing?
Oh, I don't know I'd go that far. It's just that she hasn't been to work for the past couple of days, and she didn't tell me she wasn't going to come in.
Maybe she quit or got a better job.
I don't think so. I still owe her for 3 days' work. If she was quitting, don't you think she'd come by for her money?
Yes, I do. Have you checked with her landlady?
No, not yet. I just assumed she was sick or under the weather or something.
Well, she's been staying at Mama Rogers' place. I can go by there on my way to Longmont's. I'll just stick my head in and see if she's all right.
Oh, thank you, Sally. That would put my mind at ease. After all, she's such a nice young woman.
Mama Rogers opened the door and smiled at Sally.
Oh, howdy, Sally. Come on in.
Melissa, is Sarah Johnson in her room? I'd like to talk with her.
Funny you should mention that. I think she moved out.
Why is that?
Well, I didn't see or hear her for a couple of days, so I peeked into her room. The bed hadn't been slept in, and all of her clothes were gone.
Did she leave owing you rent?
Oh, no. Matter of fact, she's paid up through next week. It is kind of funny, though, that she didn't ask for a refund if she was leaving for good.
Sally began to get an itch at the back of her neck that told her something was wrong. She remembered the smaller set of tracks they'd found along with Smoke's.
Did Sarah have any callers while she was here?
Well, you know, I don't allow gentlemen visitors to my women boarders, but a couple of times, two men did stop by and leave messages for her.
Citizens of Big Rock?
No, they were strangers. Far as I know, they were staying over at the hotel on Main Street.
Strangers, huh?
Yeah. And come to think of it, I haven't seen the two of them the past few days either.
Maybe I'll just stop by the hotel and see what's going on.
The desk clerk smiled at Sally as he flipped through the pages of his register book.
Oh, here it is, Mrs. Jensen. Their names are Carl Jacoby and Daniel Macklin. Macklin's been here a few months. Jacoby arrived not too long ago.
Could I see that book, Mort?
Certainly.
Both men had signed a home address of Pueblo, Colorado.
Thank you, Mort.
Sally turned and rushed out the door toward Longmont's. As she approached the table where Lewis and Monte Carson and the boys were sitting, the sheriff stood up.
I'm sorry, Sally, but the boys haven't been able to find those wagon tracks yet.
I think we need to look at the trail that goes back to Pueblo, Monty.
What? Why do you say that?
I don't know exactly, but there are some very strange things happening that concern a young lady that is from there.
Sally went on to tell them all she'd found out before coming to the saloon. She noticed Cal and Pearlie looking at each other.
Sally, Pearlie just reminded me of something that happened when we went through Pueblo on the way up to Canada last year.
Uh-huh.
There was a gunfight and some men from Pueblo were killed by our group.
Any of them named Johnson or Jacoby or Macklin?
No, not as I recall.
Monty, I think Smoke's disappearance ties in somehow with that of a girl who called herself Sarah Johnson. Now that I think of it, she was awfully curious about Smoke when we met on the train. I didn't catch it at the time, but she asked a lot of questions about him.
And you think that ties in with the killing in Pueblo last year?
Probably. But it doesn't matter. We have four people who've disappeared from Big Rock in the last few days, so there's got to be some connection.
She's right, Monty. What are the odds of that happening and it not being related?
I agree. Let's get moving up the trail to Pueblo.
Meanwhile, Cletus and Sarah and their men were getting closer to Pueblo, where Angus McDougal had some plans for Smoke Jensen. Sarah was beginning to feel less and less sure that she was doing the right thing. The more she talked to Smoke, the harder it was for her to see him as a cold-blooded killer. In spite of how she'd tricked and betrayed him in order to take him to her father, he seemed to bear her no malice. When she asked him about this, he just shrugged.
I guess I'd probably feel much the same way if I were in your shoes. Matter of fact, I have done pretty much the same thing. The only difference was, I knew I was right, and you don't.
That night, they stopped and fixed camp for the last time. By the end of the next day, Cletus said they'd be at the McDougal Ranch. Exhausted from her ride and her mental battle with herself about the rightness of what she'd done, Sarah flopped down on the ground near the fire and stared into the flames as if she could find some answers there. Smoke, who was standing a few yards away with his hands tied, glanced her way. His eyes widened, and he took two quick steps and launched himself at her head first. His body slammed into hers, knocking her to the side and almost into the flames. Cletus, seeing this and hearing Sarah's cry of surprise and pain, whipped out his Walker Colt and aimed it at the back of Smoke's head. Before he could pull the trigger, he saw Smoke twist his body around and lift his boots into the air. A dark brown mottled shape flashed into the light and a 5-foot-long timber rattler struck at Smoke's boots, his fangs slashing a double groove in the soles of the shoes. Smoke brought the heels of his boots down hard, smashing the snake in the head and dazing it. Cletus, finally seeing what was going on, stepped over and put a bullet between the snake's eyes, blowing its head off.
What? What?
Cletus holstered his pistol and moved to her side, helping her to her feet. She leaned over Smoke, looked at the dead snake, and shuddered.
You saved my life.
Nah, probably not. The poor critter was just trying to get to the fire to warm himself up a bit. When it's this cold outside, they can't move very fast.
Oh boy, he didn't look all that slow when he struck at your boots.
Now that the excitement is over, how about a cup of coffee that's boiling over by the fire?
Cletus nodded and moved over to squat next to the pot and pour a mug. He looked at Sarah, who was standing next to him.
You're right, Missy. That boy did save your life, and at some risk to his own.
I know.
Cletus glanced over his shoulder at Smoke.
You know, Missy, this is the first time in more than 20 years I've been working for your daddy that I feel like he's dead wrong about something.
What are we going to do, Cleet?
I don't know, Missy. I'm afraid we both got some thinking to do on it before we get home tomorrow.
He got slowly to his feet and carried the mug of coffee over and handed it to Smoke, who nodded his thanks.
I want to thank you for what you've done, Jensen.
Sarah means something special to you, doesn't she, Cletus?
I'm her godfather, and I've known her all her life.
Then you're welcome, Cletus.
Later that night, after everyone had eaten and while even the sentries were dozing in their appointed spots, Sarah slipped out of her blankets and crawled over to where Smoke lay curled up next to the coals of the fire. Sometime in the last couple of hours, the lowering clouds had released their burden, and it had begun to snow fairly heavily. Sarah glanced around in the darkness and could see no one stirring. She reached over and nudged Smoke with her hand, holding her finger to her lips when he came instantly awake and stared at her face in the meager light of the coals. Without saying a word, she slipped a clasp knife into his hand. When he raised his eyebrows in question, she pointed toward the nearby mountains, even though they were not visible through the storm. Smoke nodded and eased the knife open. It took him less than 5 seconds to saw through the ropes on his wrists and scramble to his feet. He looked toward the line of horses tied to a rope stretched between two trees, but Sarah saw his glance and shook her head. He shrugged, smiled, and grabbed up his blanket from the ground. Throwing it over his shoulders, he waved to her, and seconds later he had disappeared into the billowing white clouds of the snowstorm. Sarah took another look around to make sure no one had seen what she'd done, and then she crawled back to her blankets, mussing the snow behind her to hide her tracks. On the other side of the fire, Cletus shook his head and smiled at her actions. He had never been more proud of her in all the years he'd known her. He lay his head back down on his saddle and pulled the blanket up to his chin. Maybe with a little luck, Jensen could get to the mountains before daylight, and their moral dilemma would be solved.
Can't kill a man who ain't there.
Monte Carson, acknowledging Pearlie's superior tracking skills, let him lead the way up the trail northward toward Pueblo. Pearlie leaned over the side of his mount, and sometimes he even dismounted to squat next to some tracks, as he looked for the telltale signs of the passage of a wagon with new iron rims on the wheels. This caused the group to move slowly, something Cal in his youthfulness chafed at.
Jimmy Pearlie, can't you go no faster than that?
Lewis glanced over at him.
It won't do much good to race along making good time if we're going in the wrong direction, Cal. And this snow covering up the tracks isn't helping matters any either.
I know, it's just I'm real worried about Smoke.
We all are, Cal. But we mustn't let that keep us from doing the right thing in searching for him. It's very difficult to keep a clear mind when one is worried or frightened, but that is precisely when it is most important to do so.
Suddenly, up ahead, Pearlie got down off his horse and knelt next to some tracks just to the side of the road.
Looky here. Here's where the wagon got off the road a little bit and out of all the other tracks. It's our buckboard, all right.
Now, we can ride full out, see if we can catch up to those owl hoots.
But not too fast, Monty. We don't want to ride so fast we run up on the scoundrels without being ready for them. Something easy to do in a storm like this. That could get Smoke killed in a hurry.
Monty nodded and set his hat down tight on his head. He leaned over the saddle horn, spurred his horse, and kicked it into a gallop. The others followed right behind with bandanas tied over their noses and faces to help against the frigid north wind they were riding right into. Meanwhile, up ahead a few miles, Bob Bartlett, Juan Gomez, and Billy Free had taken up positions on either side of the trail, where it narrowed between two large outcroppings of boulders. The forest on either side of the trail was very thick with brush, and the land there had a steep slope to it, which would make it almost impossible for anyone to move around and flank them without becoming targets from the high ground.
How are we gonna know who to stop, Bob? How are we gonna be able to tell if they're tracking Jensen or not, especially in this storm? Hell, I can't see crap through all this snow.
It don't much matter, Billy. For the next 12 hours or so, till it gets full on dark, we're gonna stop anybody and everybody who tries to come up there on that trail. That way, we can be sure nobody can catch up to us before we get to the ranch in Pueblo.
But I don't hanker on killing no innocent people, Bob. I know Jensen deserves what he's gonna get, but shooting down some regular men who just happen to be in a posse just don't seem right to me.
I didn't say nothing about killing nobody, Billy.
Bob looked around at the spot they had chosen to defend the trail.
From up here, we can keep anybody from passing without having to kill them. We just shoot a couple of horses out from under the riders and hit some of the rocks close by them. I have a feeling they're going to be hightailing it back to Big Rock. And the way this snow is falling, they'll play hell getting a clear shot back at us.
Billy nodded, relieved. He glanced across the trail to where Juan Gomez was sitting, looking over a large rock.
You think Gomez got that message too? Old Juan likes to use his gun a little too much for my taste.
He better have gotten a message, since I told him flat out if he killed anybody, Angus would have his scalp. The old man don't want this to turn into a range war. He just wants his revenge on the man who killed his son.
When they looked, they saw Juan pointing down at the trail as it rose to meet him. A couple of hundred yards away, five riders could barely be seen riding at speed up the road into the teeth of the storm. Bob held up his hand to keep Juan from firing too soon, and he and Billy laid down across the top of the rock they were behind and took careful aim with their Winchesters. Once the riders got in range, Bob gently squeezed the trigger on his long gun. Down below, the rider in the lead was thrown head over heels as his horse swallowed its head and collapsed underneath him. As the other riders jerked their mounts to a halt, both Billy and Juan fired at the same time. Billy missed, but the horse Juan was aiming at crow-hopped for a few seconds before it too fell to the ground. Lewis struggled to get his leg out from under his big Morgan. When the horse fell, it trapped Lewis's leg underneath him. Sally jumped off the big palouse she was riding and ran to Monty's side. She gently rolled him over and found he was conscious, but just barely. The unexpected fall had clearly stunned him badly. She looked around quickly. There was no good cover nearby. They'd have to retreat at least 100 yards back up the trail to find some place to hide. Hurley jumped down off his horse and ran to help her, while Cal did the same with Lewis. In minutes, supporting him between them, Sally and Pearlie were moving Monty back up the trail and away from the ambushers. Lewis swung up into the saddle behind Cal and they galloped back up the trail, heading for cover. When they came abreast of Sally and Pearlie, who were still struggling with a dazed and incoherent Monty, Lewis swung out of the saddle and took Sally's place, helping Pearlie, while Sally rushed to get control of hers and Pearlie's horses and keep them with them. As they hustled Monty up the trail, Lewis looked back over his shoulder toward the place where the shots had come from. The snow was blowing so hard he could barely see the spot, and he was surprised there hadn't been any more gunplay. He knew the men hiding up there could have killed him if they'd so desired, even with the reduced visibility of the snowstorm. Why they hadn't was a mystery he didn't have time to puzzle out now, though. He had to get Monty undercover and then determine if he needed immediate medical help. Up on the ridge, Bob nodded in satisfaction. They'd done a good job stopping those pilgrims from getting up the trail. He had no idea who they were, whether they were a posse after Jensen or not. But it didn't make any difference. No one was going to pass their way on this day, no matter who they were.
You see that, Bob?
What?
I think one of those people was a woman. I could see her long black hair hanging out from under her hat when she ran to that man that was on the ground.
So?
I just can't believe if that was a posse that they let a woman ride along. Leastways, I ain't never seen no woman on a posse before.
Like I said before, it don't matter none who's down there. Fact is, it's our job to keep everybody from passing. Now, I'll keep an eye on those galoots down there, and you can get back there and stir up that fire. I'm thinking some hot coffee sure go down good right now to take the chill out of my bones.
Down below, Sally had laid Monty down on his back and was sponging his forehead with cool water from her canteen. As snowflakes began to accumulate on his shirt, she had Pearly cover him with a blanket.
How are you feeling, Monty?
I don't rightly know, Sally. Where are we? What happened to me?
We're on the trail after Smoke's kidnappers, Monty. And someone shot your horse out from under you, causing you to take a bad fall.
Smoke's kidnappers?
Lewis frowned and touched Sally on the shoulder, indicating he wanted to talk with her out of Monty's hearing. She got up and they walked a short distance away, turning their backs to the north wind to lessen the chill.
I think he's got a concussion, Sally. I've seen it before when someone got hit on the head. It makes them forget what they've done the past few days. And it can be very serious.
I know. We've got to get him back to Big Rock where Dr. Spaulding can take a look at him.
You think he's fit to ride a horse?
Not by himself. But if you ride behind him and help hold him in the saddle, I think he can do it. He's going to have to, Lewis. The storm looks like it's going to be pretty bad, and I don't know if he will survive the night of freezing temperatures. Not in his condition.
I agree. Anyway, they've got us pretty well boxed in here. And I don't see any way past them without a larger force of men. And especially not with the five of us having only 3 horses left.
Sally went back over to Monty.
Monty, we're going to try to get you up on a horse. Lewis is going to ride with you on the way back to Big Rock.
It took both Cal and Pearly to get Monty up on the horse and to hold him there while Lewis climbed up behind him.
Now you just hold on to the saddle horn, Monty, and I'll do the riding for both of us.
Since she was the lightest, Sally rode double with Cal while Pearly had his own horse to himself.
Pearly, since you're riding alone, why don't you hightail it on back to Big Rock and see if you can get the doc to come out to meet us with a buckboard? That way he can get to see Monty sooner.
Pearly touched his hat and put the spurs to his mount, heading back down the trail as fast as he could ride. For the others, it was slow going as they rode toward home. Lewis was afraid to push the horse too fast, lest he stumble in the snow or jar Monty and cause more problems inside his head.
Who do you think it was back there that just shot us up?
It must have been some of the people that took Smoke.
I wonder why they didn't try and kill us. They certainly had a good chance to do so.
I don't know, Lewis. Perhaps their only quarrel is with Smoke, and they don't want to kill anyone else unless they have to.
But if they're that angry with Smoke, why take him? Once they had a drop on him, why didn't they just kill him and be done with it? That would have been a lot less dangerous and would have made a lot more sense than taking him prisoner.
I don't know, Lewis. But I do intend to find out, and God help whoever is behind this.
Lewis glanced at Sally and felt the hairs on the back of his neck stir. He'd seen that look before, in Smoke's eyes, and it always meant someone was about to die. Suddenly, he felt very sorry for whoever had taken Smoke, because he knew their days were numbered. Smoke moved through the night as fast as he could, considering the snowstorm made the darkness almost absolute, and he was running through snow that was getting deeper by the minute. It was only his excellent night vision that kept him from breaking an ankle or impaling himself on a tree limb or other natural obstruction in the heavy forest he was traversing. Knowing the storm, like most early fall storms, was coming almost directly out of the north, he realized all he had to do to keep on track was to keep the wind directly in his face. That way, he avoided traveling in circles, as most inexperienced men did when moving in unfamiliar territory. Smoke knew the mountain ranges all around him were closest directly to the north, and getting up into the high lonesome was his only chance to avoid the men who would surely be on his trail no later than daybreak. He knew from earlier in the day that the closest mountain was about 7 miles away and that he had absolutely no chance to make it before daylight, not on foot, and traveling through darkness and snow that was rapidly getting up to his mid-calves. The only good thing about his rapid advance was that the exertion was keeping his body temperature high enough to avoid frostbite due to exposure to the extreme cold. The bad news was that his only weapon was a 5-inch clasp knife. He was completely without any other supplies or food. Only a mountain man, and a crazy one at that, would think that he had any chance at all against more than a dozen well-armed men on horseback on his trail under these conditions. Well, this crazy mountain man still had a few tricks up his sleeve, and if he could keep from freezing to death long enough, he'd show them a thing or two. The snow was blowing almost horizontally when the camp began to wake up the next morning. Dawn was evident only through a general lightening up of the snow, since there was no morning sun to be seen. Cletus, as usual, was the first to arise, and he piled fresh wood onto the smoldering coals of last night's campfire. He filled pots with water and heaped handfuls of coffee in preparation for an early breakfast. He knew from his observation the night before that Smoke Jensen had escaped his bounds. But as he busied himself around the fire, he pretended not to notice the empty space where Smoke had lain the previous night. As the men gathered slowly around the fire, holding out hands to get them warm and gratefully accepting mugs of steaming coffee, he told Jimmy Corbett to get started cooking some fatback and beans in the large skillets they'd brought along.
Don't worry with trying to make biscuits in this storm. We've still got some left from last night's dinner that ought to do.
We're gonna have to dip them sinkers in coffee to get them soft enough to chew. Otherwise, you're liable to break a tooth on them.
Cletus was about to reply when Wally Stevens got everyone's attention.
Hey, everybody! Jensen's gone!
Cletus forced a surprised look on his face and ran over to where Smoke was supposed to be lying.
Well, I'll be damned. The bastard's not here.
I don't see no ropes, so maybe he couldn't get them loose and his hands are still tied.
What's going on here?
Looks like Jensen has somehow managed to escape from the camp.
Escaped? How in the world was he able to do that?
I don't know, Miss McDougal, but he can't have gotten far in this storm, not on foot.
How do you know he didn't take one of the horses?
After a quick count, Cletus assured everyone that Smoke had not, in fact, taken any of the mounts. The men went back to the camp and began to make a circle around the periphery, trying to locate any tracks Smoke might have left. After an hour of searching, they all decided the storm had covered any traces he might have made. They gathered around the fire to get warm again and to discuss what they ought to do.
You got any bright ideas, Cleet? Because I surely don't relish going back to the ranch and having Mr. McDougal chew my ears off for letting Jensen get away from us.
Cletus thought for a moment as he finished off his mug of coffee. Finally, he looked around.
All right, here is what I think. Jensen could have gone in only two directions, north or south.
Why do you say that?
Because if he headed either east or west, all he's going to find is a big prairie with almost no cover to speak of. Jensen's too smart to put himself in that position, because in this weather, no cover means he'd freeze to death. Now, if he heads south, back towards his home, we got three men behind us guarding the trail. If, on the other hand, he heads north towards the nearest mountain range, then he's got a good chance of hiding out from us if he makes it.
So you think he's probably gone north toward the mountains?
It's what I'd do in his place. Of course, we're going to have to cover all the directions, just in case he tried to fool us by going someplace we wouldn't think he'd try.
It's going to split us up pretty good.
Not really. Remember, Jensen's on foot and doesn't have any weapons. We can send one man east and one man west. If he's out there in the open, they should be able to run him down before nightfall and take him prisoner again.
Now, what about south?
I think one man should be able to get back down the trail and warn Bartlett and Gomez and Free to be on the lookout for him. That should leave us plenty of men to undertake a campaign to catch him before he can get too far into the mountains if he headed north.
Missy, I wish I'd had you running my outfit during the war. You plumb got a mind for tactics.
Well, I'd suggest we get a move on. Cleet, you pick the men to go east and west and south. And I'll see to getting their canteens filled with hot coffee to keep them from freezing to death on the way.
We got time to eat first, Miss McDougal?
Certainly. We can't go out into this storm on a manhunt with our bellies empty now, can we, man?
Jimmy, get those beans to cooking, boy. We got a man to catch.
Yes, sir.
As Sarah began to fill canteens with hot coffee, Cletus looked at her and shook his head. He had never seen a better performance. No one would ever suspect that she'd let Jensen go herself, and he damn sure wasn't going to enlighten anyone. He stepped over to the edge of the fire and stood looking into the north wind, in the direction Jensen must have gone if he was to have any chance to avoid capture. What would it take for a man to have the courage to take off on foot into a blizzard like this with no weapons and no warm clothes to speak of? A man would otherwise have to be completely without hope of survival to take a chance like that. And Jensen certainly knew that for him to stay in camp would mean certain death. Monty was sitting unconscious in front of Lewis, being held in place by Lewis's hands around him. The sheriff's head lolled limply to and fro as the horse moved. The group had just reunited with Pearlie and Doc Spaulding, who had brought a wagon to transport Monty in.
Cal, get over here and help me take Monty down and get him in the back of my wagon. But be as gentle as you can.
Moments later, Monty was lying on his back in the rear compartment of Cotton's wagon, and the doctor was leaning over him, checking his pupils and feeling his pulse.
Has he had any violent purging? Vomit?
Yes, once. Right after he tried to get up after the fall.
That's not a good sign. It means he's definitely had a concussion.
I know a head injury shouldn't be moved, Cotton, but I thought the time saved getting him under your care and out of the cold was well worth the danger of moving him. There was no shelter on the trail, and we had no way of keeping him warm in the storm.
You're probably right, Sally. At any rate, it's hard to say which is worse, exposure to the elements or movement.
The doc straightened up after tucking the blankets around Monty to keep him as warm as possible.
Now, I need to get him back to my office where he can be properly cared for.
As he climbed up onto the seat of the wagon, he looked back down at Sally.
Perhaps you better swing back by Monty's house and tell Mary what's going on. She can come to my office and sit with him if she wishes.
How serious is it, Cotton?
Well, it's a good sign that he survived the trip on horseback. He's obviously had some minor bleeding in his head and a severe concussion. The only question now is, will he have any more? And just how much damage that he's already had has done to his mind. He's gonna need some luck.
What do we do about Smoke?
First, I need to go talk to Mary and tell her what happened. We can't do Smoke any good right now. Not with those men blocking the trail.
Miss Sally, we could get a big posse together in less time than it takes to say heck. Just about everybody in Big Rock would go along if they thought Smoke was in trouble.
He's correct, Sally. With a large number of men, we could get by that ambush and go after the men who took Smoke.
Yes, Lewis. I believe we could do that. But how many men would get hurt or possibly killed trying to get past that ambush site?
When he paused, unable to answer, Sally smiled sadly.
See what I mean? Do you think Smoke would want a lot of townspeople getting hurt trying to rescue him?
No, I guess not, Sally.
Look at it this way. If whoever took him wanted to kill him, he's already dead. If he's still alive by now, then there is some other reason for taking him and keeping him alive. Either way, waiting until morning to continue our trip after them won't make much difference.
You think the men guarding the trail will be gone by then?
Probably. They cannot hope to hold the trail forever. My guess is they were just trying to give whoever has Smoke time to get where they're going. We should be able to get by in the morning.
I just hope we're not too late for Smoke.
Cal, you should have more faith in Smoke. He has managed to survive much worse than this for a lot of years.
Just as Cletus and Sarah and their men were saddling up their mounts, Daniel Macklin approached Cletus.
Say, Cleet, I think somebody ought to ride on over to the ranch and tell Angus what's going on.
And just why would you think that, Mac, since Angus put me in charge of this little fracas?
Well, for starters, you got 4 men covering our back trail and 2 more heading off east and west. So that only leaves 6 or 7 of us to head out after Jensen in the mountains.
So I say again, Mac, what is your point?
Well, I'd done some talking about Jensen when I was in his town waiting for Sarah to make up her mind what to do.
Yeah, so?
What I found out was that Jensen's not only a famous gunfighter, he was a mountain man from the time he was a little boy until just a few years ago.
Is that a fact?
Yep. And you know that a handful of us cowboys ain't gonna be no match for a mountain man up in those mountains.
You may be right, Mac. Of course, I'm hoping to catch up to Jensen before he gets a chance to get up into those mountains.
Well, if you do, then you'll be able to handle him with no problem, assuming you catch him out in the open. Of course, if you don't, you're gonna need all the help you can get.
Cletus glanced at Sarah, who was busily cinching up her saddle, and pretended not to be paying any attention to their talk. Cletus was caught in a dilemma. He wanted Jensen to do exactly what Macklin said he was worried about. That is, get up into the mountains and disappear so they couldn't find him and take him back to Angus. But he didn't want Angus to suspect as much, so he had to play the game of doing his best to capture the gunman.
Nah. I guess you're right, Mac. Now, why don't you hightail it on ahead to the ranch and see if Angus wants to hire more men to come out here and help us hunt Jensen down if he makes it to the mountains? That way, we can leave it up to Angus how much he really wants Jensen.
My thoughts exactly, Cleet.
If you do bring more men, plan to meet up with us at that old line cabin at the base of the mountain near where that stream comes out onto flat ground.
Mac nodded and he swung up into his saddle, tipped his hat, and put the spurs to his mount, heading up the road toward the McDougal Ranch in Pueblo. Cletus looked over at Sarah to see how she was taking this, but all he could see was that her jaw was set and her lips were tightly squeezed together as she finished setting her saddle and throwing her saddlebags across the animal's rump.
That all right with you, Sarah?
Sure, Cleet. What Mac said made sense. And we may well need some help if Jensen makes it up into those slopes.
I just hope Angus don't send a bunch of flatlanders that don't know which end of a gun the bullet comes out of to help us. Otherwise, we're going to need more than one wagon to carry all the bodies back in.
Instead of trying to run the entire several miles to the lower slopes of the nearest mountain and exhausting himself, Smoke alternated walking at a fast pace with jogging for 50 yards. He kept his head lowered and his eyes squinted against the blowing snow and wind in his face. But even so, it wasn't long before his eyes began to burn and itch from the drying effects of the constant wind. He'd known men up in the mountains who'd had their eyes frozen shut by blizzards like this. He didn't want to take any chances. So he kept the brim of his hat down low and his head bent down, glancing up occasionally to make sure he wasn't about to walk into a crevice or boulder. Soon the snow had accumulated to a depth almost up to his knees, and it was beginning to make walking extremely difficult and running impossible. He knew he was going to have trouble getting a deep cover on the mountainside before dawn. The only good thing about the amount of snow falling was that it would completely obliterate his tracks, so if the gang of men tried to follow him, they wouldn't be able to find him, and it would slow them down as much as it was him. Normally, faced with a storm such as this and no horse, Smoke would cut some branches off pine trees and build himself a lean-to to weather out the storm out of the wind. With 10 or so angry men on his trail, this wasn't an option. But if he didn't do something to get out of the weather, he was gonna freeze to death while he walked. His only hope was to make it until dawn lightened the eastern sky, so he could find something else that would do to both hide him and keep him out of the cold. By the time the eastern sky began to lighten enough for him to see surroundings, Smoke was shivering with cold and weak from dehydration. His sweat had frozen on his skin and his mouth was so dry he couldn't work up a good spit. He resisted the urge to eat the snow, as that would only lower his body temperature. He knew of several mountain men who'd made that mistake, and they hadn't lived to tell about it. As the day got brighter, Smoke noticed a fallen ponderosa pine off to his right. It appeared to have been struck by lightning, as there was a jagged blackened scar along its trunk. He slogged over to it and saw to his relief that the giant had taken out several other smaller trees around it when it crashed to the ground. Smoke moved along the trunk until he came to the jumble of broken and crushed limbs at the top of the tree. Sure enough, it was as he'd hoped. The tangle of tree limbs and trunks and roots made a perfectly acceptable place to get out of sight and weather out the rest of the storm. With any luck, the men chasing him would just ride on by if they came this way. Smoke pushed aside a thick branch and bent over to worm his way into the thick tangle. He realized immediately what that sound was. It was a mountain cougar who'd had the same idea using the tree for shelter as Smoke had. Moving slowly, Smoke took out the small clasp knife and worked the blade open, trying not to provoke the big cat into a charge. He couldn't see the animal in the gloom of the enclosure, but he could smell its fetid breath and musky odor as if it was very close. Suddenly, the cat rushed at him out of the darkness of the jumble of tree limbs. Smoke jumped back and let go of the branch he'd been bending back to enter. The branch snapped forward, catching the cougar in the face as it leapt at Smoke. Smoke dove onto the cat before it could regain its balance and slashed to and fro with the small knife, praying he'd hit the throat before the cat got his arm in its powerful jaws. They rolled over a couple of times, the cougar's claws digging into Smoke's back. Luckily, the intervening branch kept the cougar from gutting Smoke with its hind feet, as cougars usually did. Moments later, it was over. Smoke's knife tore its throat open almost to the spine. Unable to see the damage to his back, Smoke did the next best thing. He pulled his shirt up and lay on his back in the snow. The pain was almost unbearable, but Smoke counted himself lucky to be alive, and a little pain was a small price to pay for shelter, and now food, too. He sat up and pulled his shirt back down over his back. He had no way of knowing if the bleeding had stopped, but he figured he'd find out soon enough if the blood soaked the shirt. He didn't dare start a fire, so he quickly skinned the cougar and gutted it. Since liver had the most nutrients, Smoke ate as much of the raw liver as his stomach could stand. Once he'd filled his belly, he scraped the skin as best he could. He cut it into wide pieces he could wrap around his lower legs as leggings to keep from getting frostbite when he walked through deep snow. It wouldn't smell very good, but that was the least of his worries. With the still warm liver in his stomach, he risked eating enough snow to slake his thirst, and then he curled up in the crown of the fallen tree under a blanket of pine boughs and the rest of the cougar's skin. He was asleep instantly. Cletus took the lead with Sarah right behind him as the group headed through the forest toward the mountain whose peak couldn't be seen through the driving snow. Even though they were on horseback, they couldn't move much faster than Smoke had been able to because of the depth of the snow and the uneven wooded terrain.
Hey, boss.
Yeah, George? Maybe it'd be a good idea if we spread out instead of riding in a line like this. In this storm, it's better than even odds Jensen froze to death last night. It'd be a shame to ride past his carcass and not know it.
Cletus had to admit the man had a good point. Though he didn't think for a minute a mountain man would ever freeze to death in a minor storm like this, Cletus knew that Jensen might well have gone to ground somewhere between here and the mountain, hoping they'd ride right on past him.
That's a good idea, George. I want you men to spread out and keep a sharp eye for any sign of Jensen along the way. And be sure to stay inside of the men on either side of you. I don't want Jensen to be able to slip between us. Sarah, I want you to stay next to me. Your daddy'd have my hide if I let anything happen to you.
Sarah gave Cletus a gentle smile. They both knew she could shoot every bit as straight as him. She was probably a lot faster on the draw. Still and all, he'd been a good and loyal friend to both her and her father, so she didn't point this out to him.
All right, Cleet. I'll stay close so you can protect me from the big, bad Smoke Jensen.
Don't underestimate this man, Sarah. I know you don't think he is a really bad man, but men who are desperate to live will sometimes do things they wouldn't ordinarily do.
and that includes Smoke Jensen.
Sarah had a hard time imagining Smoke Jensen would ever be desperate, but she kept her mouth shut and rode alongside Cletus as he moved northward toward the nearest mountain. She pulled her heavy fur-lined deerskin coat tied around her shoulders as they rode into the freezing wind, wondering how Jensen, who was dressed only in buckskins, would be able to survive the brutal conditions. Even though they were downwind, Smoke heard the approaching riders when they were still over 100 yards away. He came instantly awake. Years of living in the high lonesome had trained him to be able to hear and see things most normal men couldn't, and he could respond to them instinctively without having to think about it beforehand. It was a trait that had saved his life on more than one occasion when he and Preacher were living up in the high lonesome. He eased to the edge of his tree limb hideout and glanced around to make sure the snow had covered all signs of the struggle with the big cat. He nodded in satisfaction as he saw a pristine blanket of fresh snow around the jumble of fallen trees he was in. He was also relieved to see that the storm was still fairly heavy. He was counting on it to mask his next moves. He readied himself by moving to the very edge of his hideout so that he could exit it quickly and silently when the time came. And then he got out the clasp knife and opened it. He was gonna need it very soon now. Trying to keep a straight line of riders going into a storm and weaving back and forth in a fairly thick forest is pretty much impossible. Thus, the line of riders coursing through the woods towards Smoke was ragged and uneven, with some men being 50 or 60 yards ahead or behind the others on either side of them. The fury of the storm kept conversation between the riders at a minimum, and most were riding with their heads down and their hats pulled low over their brows to keep the worst of the wind and snow out of their faces. Smoke knew he could just lie still. Odds were that the men would pass him by and he'd be safe for a while. But he'd still be without a horse, and this put him at a terrible disadvantage in the deadly game of hide-and-seek they were playing. Nope, he couldn't afford to let him go by. He needed both weapons and a horse if he was gonna survive this death hunt. He hated the idea of killing a man he didn't even know. But the man must have known what he was doing when he signed on to take another man to his certain death. Smoke knew it was much too dangerous with the other men so close to try to take a man's gun and horse and leave him alive, so he steeled himself to the inevitable. He was gonna have to hit fast and hard and not worry about the consequences. Smoke waited until a figure on horseback was directly opposite his hiding place. As the man moved just past him, Smoke eased out of the tree limbs and took a running jump on the back of the man's horse. When he was completely limp, Smoke eased the man's hat off and put it firmly on his own head, throwing his own hat to the ground. Next, he took the man's gun belt and holster and put it around his waist. The hardest part was removing the man's thick rawhide and fur coat without letting his body fall off the horse, which Smoke kept moving by gentle nudges of his heels, guiding the animal with his knees. When he had the man's hat, gun, and coat on, Smoke started to let the body fall, and then he thought better of it. Leaning to the side, he felt in the man's right boot. Sure enough, there was a long-bladed skinning knife there. It would be of way more use to Smoke than the small clasp knife he'd used to kill the man. Looking to both sides to make sure he'd been unobserved so far, Smoke waited until a particularly strong flurry of snow came, and then he let the man's body fall to the side, where it landed in a snowbank. Slowly, so as not to draw too much attention to himself, Smoke let the horse he was riding ease on out ahead of the line of men. Before long, the men on either side of him were barely visible in the blowing snow. Smoke knew the storm couldn't last too much longer, and he planned to be well away before the snow stopped and he became fully visible to the others. He hoped with the limited visibility of the storm, the man's hat and coat would fool his friends into thinking Smoke was him.
Hey, Charlie, what's your hurry?
Smoke hunched over, tightening his grip on the reins. He knew he didn't have much longer before his ruse was discovered. As he passed a tight grove of trees, Smoke leaned forward and dug his heels into his mount, causing it to break into a full gallop ahead.
Hey, what the?
Yo, Cleet! Something's wrong with Charlie Blake! He's riding like a bat out of hell!
The man on Smoke's right kicked his horse into a gallop also, wanting to see why his friend was racing ahead. As he pulled closer, he realized it wasn't Charlie Blake on that horse ahead of him.
Damn! That ain't Charlie, fellas! That's Jensen!
He might have caught Smoke, but a branch suddenly appeared in front of him and whipped him across the face. The ghostly figure on horseback in front of him disappeared into the gloomy snowstorm ahead. Cletus and Sarah rode over to Sam Jackson.
You all right, Sam?
Yeah, I'll be all right.
You say that wasn't Charlie up there?
No, I don't think so. He had Charlie's coat on, but he didn't sit on a horse like Charlie, and he looked about 30 pounds heavier, 5 or 6 inches taller.
But how'd he get Charlie's coat and horse?
I don't know, boss, but I bet we ain't gonna find out what happened from Charlie either.
All right, man, let's double back a ways and see if we can find Charlie's body.
Sarah took a deep breath, felt a deep sorrow as well. She didn't know Charlie Blake well, but if he was dead, then it was her fault for letting Smoke Jensen escape. She shook her head as she pulled her horse's head around. How was she gonna live with herself if more men were killed because of her? As he rode hell-bent for leather through the deepening snow and into the teeth of the freezing north wind after capturing the man's horse, Smoke leaned as close to his mount's head as he could to avoid being scraped out of the saddle by a tree limb. He had to trust the horse's instinct not to run headlong into a tree or off a cliff, and so all he could do for the first couple of hundred yards of their flight was to hang on for dear life and hope for the best. At least it beat a bullet in the back. After about 10 minutes at a full gallop, Smoke raised his head and looked back over his shoulder. The snow was still blowing, and all he could see was a solid sheet of white behind him. He slowed the horse and cocked his head to the side, listening to see if he could hear any pursuit over the howling of the wind. No. He turned back around, pulled his hat down tight, rode on into the wind toward the mountain up ahead, moving slower now to give his horse a rest. He knew that if he could make the slopes up ahead before his captors caught up to him, he would have the advantage for the first time since the adventure began. He smiled grimly. Then, it was gonna be time to pay him back. Angus MacDougall was just sitting down to a solitary supper served by his housekeeper, Cook, when the door banged open and a breathless Daniel Macklin barged in.
Where is that son of a bitch?
Where's who?
Jensen, of course. You remember him, don't you? The bastard who gunned my Johnny down? The man you went to Big Rock to get for me?
That's what I come to tell you, Mr. MacDougall.
Well, spit it out, man. What the hell's going on?
We're about a half day's ride from here when Jensen somehow managed to get loose and, well, he ran away.
What?
Now, wait a minute, Mr. MacDougall. He ain't gotten away. Leastways, not all the way away.
No? Now, just what the hell does that mean?
He didn't get no horse. And he's on foot in a bad storm some miles from the nearest mountain. He's running on foot through the woods with Cletus and the rest of the men on horseback after him.
Oh, well, then it shouldn't take Cleet long to run him down then, should it?
No, sir, I don't think so.
If that's so, then why did Cleet send you here?
Well, the fact of the matter is Jensen used to be a mountain man, sir, and Cletus thought that if he did manage to make the mountains, we might ought to have a few more men looking for him.
I guess I can't argue with that logic. Let me see. You got about 10-11 men up there now. Another 10 or so ought to be plenty. With 20 men, I can run a search of the mountain that a squirrel couldn't get through. Well, it's too late now to round up any good men. We'll get to bed early and be in Pueblo at dawn. We should be able to find 10 men who want to make a little extra money without any problem. You have anything to eat before you get on the way here?
No, sir.
Well, then, head on over to the bunkhouse, and I'll have my cook send you over a plate.
Thank you, sir.
The next morning, just as the sun was peeking over the eastern slope mountains, Angus and Macklin were knocking on Sheriff Wally Tupper's door in Pueblo.
Yeah? I'm sorry, Angus. Come on in, and I'll have the wife fix you up some coffee and breakfast.
Don't have time for that, Wally. I need you to get dressed and help me round up 10 or 15 hard men to go on the trail with me.
You mean like a posse?
Kinda.
Why, what for?
We're going polecat hunting.
What?
My men were on the way back here with Smoke Jensen in tow when he managed to get away. He's on foot and running for the mountains as we speak. I need some men to help me roust him out of those woods if Cletus doesn't find him first.
But Angus, Jensen ain't broke no laws that I know of.
So what?
Well, I can't hardly send no posse after a man who ain't done nothing wrong.
Angus reached over, grabbed the front of Wally's nightshirt, and jerked his face close.
Wallace Tupper, if you don't want to spend the rest of your miserable life shooting stray dogs for 50 cents apiece in this town instead of being sheriff, you better make up your mind who you're gonna listen to. Me, or those goddamn law books you're always reading?
But Angus...
But nothing, Wally. Now, I'm going to go on over to the cafe on Main Street and have myself some coffee and maybe some eggs and bacon. If you aren't there with at least 10 good men by the time I finish, I'll assume you're out hunting for dogs to shoot.
Less than an hour later, while Angus was still sopping up egg yolks with a folded piece of pancake, Wally Tupper appeared at the cafe with 12 men. All of the men had a hard look about them, and all were armed to the teeth. Wally walked into the cafe, his hat in his hands.
I managed to get you 12 men, Angus.
That's a good man, Wally. I knew you'd come through for me as usual.
I told them since this wasn't an official posse that you'd be paying them for the trip.
No problem, Wally. Since this is personal, I really can't expect the town to pay for it now, can I?
No, sir, I guess not.
Now, while I'm finishing up here, I want you to get a couple of pack horses and go on over to the general store and get a couple of crates of dynamite, some cans of black powder, lots of extra ammunition of various calibers, and enough grub for the men to be gone a week or so.
Is there anything else?
No, I think that ought to do it for right now.